With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head-to-head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Bloodsucker Brawl. On Monday's episode, we saw 1992's Dracula take the classic story and add a little love to the proceedings. Slash, it's Dracula told as an erotic dream. Not my words, but those of Francis Ford Coppola. On today's show, it's all about the bromance, or lack thereof, as Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt bicker through the 19th century and Kirsten Dunst redefines the term nightmare child, adapted from Anne Rice's best-selling novel. It's 1994's Interview with the Vampire. So which movie will emerge as champion this week? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Potters. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
And very quick reminder, don't forget you can follow us on Twitter at ClashPod for all sorts of extras about each movie we cover. And also please take the time to rate or review us, or both. It only takes 2 seconds wherever you get your pods. Please do that. It is a massive help and hugely appreciated. Thank you. So, it's part two of Dracula versus Interview with a Vampire. These were Victoria's choices. Victoria, reminders of the connection.
The connection is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Stick your neck out for camp Dracula or gothic bonkbusters.
Oh, it still tickles me.
All right, I covered Dracula on Monday, which means Christopher, you had Interview with a Vampire. We will have our winner at the end of this episode. But before that, Chris, take us on a journey.
Interview with the Vampire is the story of a very modern family in crisis. It kicks off with a hot slave owner hooking up with a hot blonde, and the pair become bonded by blood. As the years pass, the longtime companions start to squabble, and their increasingly loveless marriage hits the rocks. But the blonde refuses to believe it's over, so to keep his man, he effectively gets pregnant.
Which one of you made me the way I am?
Rather than bring them together, however, the Daughter of Darkness drives the duo apart. And so the kindly slave owner and the kid poison, cut, drown and burn the blonde before fleeing to France to watch some plays.
That'll do it. Well, for our consideration then, Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, so first watches of this one, team. Alex.
I'd seen this film once before as a teenager, and I had loved it. I remember loving this movie. I didn't remember much about it. The only two things that I remembered from the first watch before I watched it this time was Kirsten Dunst's really nasty death, which was seared onto my mind, and the incredible ending, which I loved. So I was genuinely very excited about watching this again, and it did not disappoint. So, I mean, I've got some quibbles, little quibbles, but they're minor. So it was a good experience. Thank you for this decision, Victoria. A good call.
Vicky, what's your history with this one?
I've seen this film. We're definitely into double figures, I think, which is
wow.
a bit weird. But like I said on Monday, heavy rotation in a student house. There's a lot of it I don't remember because each time I watch it, I would sort of drift off, I guess, is one way of putting it, at certain points. And so I haven't seen it for years, though, and I was really excited to watch it again. And I love it, even though I know it's flawed. But it did feel like a long film, and it's not that long, but it does drag a little bit.
Okay. I don't need anyone's opinions of the film just yet. It's fine.
You have micromanaging the shit out of us lately. We need a discussion.
This is the section where we talk about memories of watching it, not give our opinion.
Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I step outside the bounds of the section? I apologise.
Yeah.
Save it for the verdict.
I didn't really. I mean, I did say that, you know, I really enjoyed rewatching it, and I do have quibbles, which I guess is an opinion.
Both naughty.
So I guess... Yeah, sorry, Christopher.
Did either of you read the book?
No, I haven't.
No.
Sorry, I don't even know why I bother asking Alex.
I've read books. I read the novelization of Independence Day.
I was a big fan of the books. I read a few Anne Rice books at the time. This one, Vampire Lestat. I think I read The Queen of the Damned, although I don't know if I finished that one. So, yeah, I was super excited about this one coming out and saw it at the cinema, but I haven't seen it since. So it was interesting to revisit. A bit of background on this one. And it's had an interesting story, journey to the screen. It starts with a bit of tragedy, actually. In 1970, the author Anne Rice, while attending a creative writing course, San Francisco, discovered that her 4-year-old daughter had leukemia, and the child died of the illness about 2 years later. And I think she wrote Interview the Vampire a couple of years after that. And I think you can see the influence of that, particularly in the Claudia character. But we'll get onto that. But the book was published in 1976. It sold around 10 million copies worldwide, and her Vampire Chronicles, of which this was the first book, have sold 80 million copies. So they've been a huge success.
Probably read them now. They're a big success, were they? I'll pick one of those up. Vampire Chronicles, you say. Great. I love books. Yeah.
And I think they'll be back. I think her son, Christopher Rice, has got the rights now and is looking to turn them into a TV series. So
I actually have a little bit on that. Only because it was quite recent. I saw a little bit about in May... this year, in fact, AMC have just got the rights to the Vampire Chronicles, so there is talk of it being adapted.
This year would be unlikely, wouldn't it?
I don't think they're doing it this year. I think they just acquired the rights this year. This is the section of the show, Chris, where I talk about who's acquired the rights, not whether that is in production at this point or likely to be this year.
Well, Anne Rice is a very outspoken person, and so we've got lots of juicy quotes about the journey to the screen from her coming up. But she says that the two people it was offered to first were Ridley Scott and David Cronenberg. Would you like to have seen either of them do this movie?
I don't know that I would, actually. David Cronenberg seems like a very odd fit for this. I guess Ridley Scott would have been quite interesting, so I would have been okay with that. But David Cronenberg, no. I mean, I actually think the gang bang scene in Dracula that we covered on Monday, that felt a very Cronenberg kind of vibe, where one of the brides of Dracula appears to be coming out of the other bride, like a weird birth. So that felt very Cronenberg, but there's not a lot of that in this.
Fair enough. Neil Jordan got the gig, coming off The Crying Game when he was kind of at the height of his fame and success. And he was an interesting choice. There's a lot of gender fluidity in his movies, which sort of comes into play here. But reading interviews with the pair of them at the time, and they were definitely in public arguing over who would get the credit as to who wrote the script. Anne Rice was initially very worried that he would get credit, sole credit. And then afterwards, Jordan complained that he didn't get any credit and it was all given to Anne Rice. So they were sort of bickering behind the scenes. But it's actually ended up being a very, it's very loyal to the written word, the novel. It's a pretty direct adaptation. So the big story was the casting of the stats. So what names did you guys hear read that Anne Rice wanted or that the film studio wanted? Because I've got quite a long list.
Well, Daniel Day-Lewis, but you said that.
Mm-hmm. Peter Weller. I like the sound of that. Peter Weller. Or John Malkovich. He was in there as well. I've got him on my list.
Any more?
Oh, a woman. Because didn't she panic? Because obviously they're a couple, basically, Louis and Lestat, but she got a bit nervy about it. So it suggested making one or both, you know, flipping the gender of one or both. So I don't know who it was for, but I read somewhere that Cher was considered, which would have been outrageously brilliant. And Angelica Houston, which also would have been brilliant.
Yeah, I read that Cher was up for the Lestat role briefly, or at least Anne Rice was considering making Lestat a woman. I think she said it was because she was worried that the film wouldn't be a success because of Hollywood's issues with homophobia. And so she was going to swap out a role. But
it's not exactly. Ooh, so she
Jeremy Irons! Jeremy Irons! Jeremy Irons!
Regarding casting a woman, Anne Rice said, I wrote a script in which Cher was supposed to play Louis. The whole idea was that Louis would be a transvestite woman. At that time in history, you could own your own plantation and run things if you're a man, but you couldn't if you're a woman. It was the French law. So this was a woman who dressed like a man. Otherwise, it was exactly the same as Interview with the Vampire.
Okay.
Jeremy Irons.
Yep. Jeremy Irons, she was very keen on. And Julian Sands as well was her number one choice for quite a long time. So it would have been a more wooden, I guess, Lestat. And very early on, her favourite to play the role was Rutger Hauer.
Yes.
Really? I didn't know that one. That's great.
Who would have been amazing. And he played a couple of vampires, I think, in his career. But I think he looks the part, and I think he's got that charisma and that sexiness. But as Neil Jordan put it, I cast Tom Cruise and all hell broke loose. His reason for casting Cruise, not only because he thought he was a good actor and he's a big star, but he thought that being a vampire was no different to being a Hollywood star, that you're expected to be eternally youthful, you live this secluded life, you sort of dominate a room when you walk into it. So he thought the casting was spot on, but Anne Rice did not. There are so many different places where she slagged off this casting. The famous line where she said it was like casting Edward G. Robinson as Rhett Butler. But she said, Tom Cruise casting is so bizarre, it's almost impossible to imagine how it's going to work. And it's really almost impossible to imagine how Neil could have come up with it. I have one question. Does Tom Cruise have any idea what he's getting into? I'm not sure he does. I'm not sure he's read any of the books other than the first one. And his comments on TV that he wanted to do a creature feature as a kid, well, that didn't make me feel any better.
I mean, wow. that isn't going to put a mind at ease. but he, it's, you know, it's one of those movies that you sort of, you watch this movie and you go, I really wish Tom Cruise still did films like this. And initially, your reaction is, why doesn't he? And then you kind of realize that it's not really his fault that he's not doing movies like this, because movies like this don't tend to be made anymore, like, or given the budget to afford someone like Tom Cruise. Mm.
But it's also, he's a brand, isn't he? And I think it's quite subversive, this film. And I think it's more about protecting the brand now. But when at the time, Tom Cruise is quoted as saying, of Anne Rice's quotes, when it first hit, it really hurt my feelings, to be candid about it. Her venom hurt. You don't usually start a movie with someone not wanting you to do it. That's unusual. And the producer, David Geffen, said, Anne is a difficult woman at best, and what her motives are remains somewhat beyond me. But for her to attack this movie for her own self-importance when she has been paid $2 million and stands to make a lot more money selling her books, it's just capricious. It lacks kindness, it lacks discretion, and it lacks professionalism.
Hmm. Yeah. Kind of agree. I mean, she did go back on her words, didn't she, though? There was a period where she kept trying to tell the filmmakers that they had to swap the roles, that Brad Pitt had to play Lestat and Tom Cruise, if he was going to be in this movie, should play Louis. And she said, of course, they don't listen to me. So she really wanted them to swap at one point as well. But she did then. She was very nice about Tom Cruise in the end, wasn't she?
She was, yeah. Didn't she take out like a trade ad, say, sorry about that, because he's the best thing in it, which is true. I don't think she said that. I think that. But I just think if you don't, I don't know, it's a difficult balance. She created him. She, you know, understands more about him as a character than anyone. But then, you know, you don't have to sell the film rights to your book. No one's making you do that. So, and it's a process of which, as the writer, you are not at the top of the front of the queue for who gives a shit about what you've got to say. Yeah. Difficult.
Chris, go on.
I was going to say the advert she took out in Variety is quite hilarious. She said, I'm no good at modesty. I like to believe Tom's Lestat will be remembered the way Olivier's Hamlet is remembered. Others may play the role someday, but no one will ever forget Tom's version of it. She went on to slag off Time, Newsweek, The New Yorker, and The New York Times for giving the film bad reviews, saying they're all out of touch. and now we get to what I believe is her ulterior motive. In the same advert, she said, I hope I get to write the script for the sequel. Tom's power, knowledge, skill, magnetism, and artistic integrity are part and parcel of the success of Interview with the Vampire, and there is no doubt that Tom would bring power and magic to the Vampire Lestat. please let me write it. Please let me write it.
No.
He is great in it, though. I mean, you know, there's absolutely no denying it. He is fantastic in this film.
Yes.
And she's right. She called him afterwards and apologized to him personally. And she was all like, Tom did make Lestat work. And that's something I couldn't see in a crystal ball. And you're like, all right, well, backtrack. But yeah, it's good. It's good that she did apologize, because she doesn't sound like someone who really, that comes naturally to her, from what I've read.
So should we talk about the film, or have you got any more for the background?
No. Only that River Phoenix was going to play the Christian Slater role, and then sadly died just 4 weeks before they started filming this. And so Christian Slater stepped in and then donated his entire salary to Phoenix's favorite charitable organizations. And I guess we're going to get onto it, but Brad Pitt wasn't happy making this movie, by all accounts, but I'm sure you've got stuff on that. Have you got stuff on that? Should we talk about that later?
I've got a few quotes for him sounding quite a lot like his character, but let's get into the film. I normally try and focus on sort of five major scenes, but with this one, I feel like the film sort of breaks down into different sections. So we'll go that way. It's sort of bookended in San Francisco, where Louis the Vampire wants to tell Malloy, who has a name in the film, unlike the book, a journalist, the story of his life. Which was very helpful to me, this scene, because having read the book, I thought he was called Luis the whole time. So it was good in the film to find out I've been saying it wrong for about 2 years, and he's actually Louis.
That you mean the S. name Louis you'd been saying wrong this
yes.
whole time?
Yes. Okay. A bit like you with Interview okay. with a Vampire, the title.
Right. Okay, good. Thank you. Excellent.
So he says he's been a vampire for 200 years and he's going to tell his story. And so we're transported back to New Orleans in 1791. Yeah.
Can I just ask a very quick question about Malloy, Daniel Malloy, Christian Slater's character? I it's never quite clear what his actual job is. I'm sorry, but if someone explains their job as I'm someone who follows people and asks them their stories, it's like, well, that's not a job. What do you mean? You follow people and go, have you got a story? And they go,
I'm going to say something that I might be reading what isn't there. But given the, what's the right way of, I can't think. Anyway, given the fact that Louis and Lestat and then later on with Armand, my reading of it is that they are lovers. And there's talk about Christian Slater hanging down an alleyway and them looking at each other. And it's like, I thought it was like a hookup. But then he was like, oh, but I've got a tape recorder if you want to do that first. And then he was like, okay, fine. We'll do the story. Then we'll have sex. He's like, okay, that's my reading of it.
What?
No.
No.
No, that's not right.
All right.
That's a wrong thing you've said. No, because...
All right. Yeah. So it wasn't a hookup in an alleyway. All right, fine.
No! No, he was going to eat him. Brad Pitt was going to eat him.
He does say that. You're right.
And that was my first clue when he says it. He says, I was going to eat you, Vicky, not have sex with you.
Is this you just wanting to see Christian Slater and Brad Pitt get it on? Is that what's going on here?
I would see that. I mean, I wouldn't close my eyes if that's what you're asking me.
Good. Glad we've established that. So we're in New Orleans, 1791, and Louis is a 24-year-old master of a large plantation near New Orleans, which I find problematic from the off that our hero is a slave owner. And yeah. I don't think the film ever really properly addresses it. I mean, I think you could go down the route where he's a slave owner who then becomes a slave, essentially, to his bloodlust and to Lestat. But they don't bother with that. They just... They cut out some of the stuff from the book that makes him even more repulsive.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I'm pretty uncomfortable with that being the hero of your story.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. What, is it worse in the book, Chris?
Yes. So a bit later on when they decide to leave the plantation, Louis and Lestat murder all the slaves so that no one can tell the story of who they are. So in this one, he tells them all to sort of run for their lives and gives them an out, basically. But in the book, they kill the slaves. I mean, they don't come off great here. The slaves, the only time we ever really see them, they seem like sort of you've either got a beautiful woman who he's got a connection with, or the rest of them are almost presented as savages performing voodoo, which again just seems a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think it's a bit much that Thandi Newton is enslaved by him, but she's like, have you had enough to eat? And are you okay? And I'm really worried about you. It's like, come on, let her have something where she's like, fuck you, Brad Pitt.
Yes, that pleasant relationship between slave owner and slave that is deeply unhealthy in cinema. Yeah. You know, that's why we don't have, you can't see Song of the South, but here it's, you know, it's almost presented as him being heroic. And another thing they change here as well is that we find out that Louis longs to die almost. He wants to lose his wealth, his estate, his sanity. He invites death because he's depressed because his wife and child have died in childbirth. But that was different in the book. It was his brother that died. And the thinking is that this change was made to make him seem more heterosexual from the off.
Right.
But I don't know if the film then contradicts itself with their relationship later in the film. But it's a strange change. So yeah, as we've said,
that couple's I can see why they made that change. Obviously, because you know, with the hookup between him and Christian Slater that was going to happen in the alley, and then it being his brother, it's all good change.
But from the off, Louis is a very miserable man, moping around. Lestat clocks this and decides...
I can't wait to see that change at some point in the movie. looking forward to when he has the epiphany and starts enjoying anything ever.
Lestat clocks him and it seems like it's love at first sight for him. He bites him and then says to him, do you still want death or have you tasted enough? So he's giving him, as he says over and over again in the film, Lestat, he's giving him the choice that he never had. But the choice isn't that good a choice. It's either die or be a vampire. So it's not a huge amount of options.
It really should be a choice that is presented before the initial bite.
Certainly. Yes.
You got three options here. I don't bite you and you can go about your business, have a nice day and all that. Or I bite you and then kill you. Or third option, become a vampire and then you have to eat people. I have to what? You have to kill people and drink their blood. I have to kill who? Sorry. I feel like there's something you're not telling me about this vampire deal. No, I said it. Good. Here you go.
So Louis becomes a vampire, and I want to speak briefly about the vampire lore invented in this film. As we mentioned in Dracula, we have the voiceover telling us one detail. Here, there's lots. So I've made a list of what the true and false of vampires in this film. Coffins and blood are a necessity. Although this is never explained, statues come to life when you become a vampire and look at you. They love the light and garlic. Stakes through the heart are nonsense. They're fond of looking at crucifixes. The hair grows back if you cut it. Some of them can read thoughts because the dark gift is different for each of us, which is weirdly convenient and my least favorite aspect of this. You can't drink from the dead. You are forbidden to turn a kid into a vampire. You're forbidden to kill your own kind. And Dracula was the vulgar fictions of a demented Irishman.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You should really write that list out, maybe word process it and laminate it and hand it out to people who are planning on streaming this movie, because that's actually very useful, that list, Chris. Because
you've missed one, and that is every time Tom Cruise appears on scene, there is the strum of a harpsichord. That's the one.
Is that right?
Yeah, basically. He pops up and he goes, dun, 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 and he's like, Louis, you idiot. It's great.
So we're into the next section, which I have called Vampire Louis. Sad, po-faced, miserable.
No. Sadder. More sadder. Po-faced, more miserable. He's just, oh my God. I'm just like... Oh, for God's sake.
I called him, I wrote down that he was the Morrissey of vampires, but then I remembered Morrissey actually used to be quite funny. So that's giving him too much credit. But yeah, he's refusing to take a life. So he's become a vampire, but he's drinking rat blood rather than take a human life. So he's essentially a vampire with a conscience, which frustrates Lestat, who takes him to New Orleans for sport, as he calls it, and they work their way up from a fresh young girl to a beautiful youth to an aristocrat. And it's fun watching Lestat do his business. It feels like Tom Cruise is enjoying this opportunity to play evil.
Yeah. Mm.
There's a great bit as well where Louis burns down their plantation home because he's like, we're not going to have any of this. See how you like it, not having somewhere nice. Tom Cruise, he just goes, perfect, perfect. That's just great. Shut up, Louis. I'm like, that's so good. I just love the way you shut up, Louis. I was like, oh, I mean, I wish he said that more. I wish that was the entire relationship. Whenever Louis was like, I'm not going to eat a human. I'm just going to have a rat. Shut up, Louis.
Well, there is a point where Lestat says life would be even more unbearable without me. And I feel like you could say the same about this film because it does.
Yeah,
it does improve when he's on screen. He's just, unfortunately, he's not the protagonist of this film.
Yeah, well, that ties into what I was going to say about Brad Pitt earlier. He said he didn't like how the character of Louis, which he'd loved in the book, was represented in the script. He said in the book, it's this guy going on this search of discovery, and in the meantime, he has this Lestat character that he's entranced by and abhors. And he said, in the movie, they took the sensational aspects of Lestat and made that the pulse of the film. And those things are just enjoyable and very good. But for me, there was nothing to do. Just sit and watch.
He also complained about working in London doing night shoots. He said, I'm miserable. 6 months in the effing dark. Contact lenses, makeup. I'm playing the bitch role. One day it broke me. I called David Geffen, who was a producer. I said, David, I can't do this anymore. How much will it take to get me out? And he very calmly said, $40 million. and of working in the studios in London, he said, there are no windows in there. It hasn't been refabbed in decades. You leave work in the dark. You go into this cauldron, this mausoleum, and then you come out and it's dark. I'm telling you, one day it broke me. It was like life's too short for this quality of life. And I think he's sounding quite a lot like Louis there and moaning. And I think he should just buck his ideas up because he's getting paid a lot of money and there are a lot harder jobs than that.
There are.
Yeah. I wonder if he didn't like the technique that Stan Winston created to get the veins on his face, which if Stan Winston goes, I got a new technique. This is how we're going to get those really realistic veins to pop on your face, exactly where the veins should be. And you're like, oh, cool, a technique. And then Stan Winston goes, yeah, we hang you upside down for 30 minutes so the blood rushes to your head and then we'll draw over the veins that appear. All the cast had to spend 30 minutes strung upside down as the makeup department drew the veins on where the veins actually were on their faces, which sounds hideous every morning. Morning. Brad, still miserable. I am. Great. Getting the harness. We're turning you upside down.
And then for the next sort of 15, 20 minutes, Alex, you mentioned about them torching the plantation. And it's just kind of a bit of a boring argument playing out with the Lestat telling Louis that he's a killer and Louis denying that he's a killer.
Over and over again. How many scenes? Like, I was like, I get it. He doesn't want to kill humans. He'll live on rats. And it's like there must be 10 scenes back to back. I'm exaggerating. Where that is the only thing they're talking about. And do you know what? I don't want to jump the gun here, but the biggest problem with that is that they have that conversation about like him refusing to drink the blood of humans kill. And then when he eventually starts drinking the blood of humans, it's done off screen. Like you never see him like go, fine, I'll start drinking human blood. He just suddenly is like that. Like you have that conversation, then you don't bother showing him having gone, right, I'll do it then. It's so weird.
I hadn't thought about that, but that's a very good point. As we always say, show don't tell, but they did the opposite when it comes to that big moment.
I got a bit bogged down with, which I've not been bogged down with before, whenever the multiple times I've seen this film, but how many people do you need to eat in order to stay alive? Because is it a reasonable number or not? Because if...
What's a reasonable number?
Because Louis's going, Lestat would eat, he would start with a girl and work up to her, whatever, and blah, blah, blah. So he would have like three a night. So let's just say two, because maybe Lestat is a bit greedy. So then that's 712 people a year. But then at Christmas, probably you have a couple extra because it's Christmas Day and we all eat a bit too much. That's 715 people. That's like... I can't think, like, is that like is that like a large supermarket car park worth of people? Because that's a lot of people and you're going to have to move tablet. It didn't seem to be very practical. And I know it's not supposed to be, but it was just bugging me all the way through. Like, why do you not get caught? Where are the pitchforks? Where is the scene where it's like you get run out of town because everyone?
That's what happened, though, with the plantation scene. They had to burn it down and go on the run because the locals had so many had gone missing that the locals had turned on them.
Yeah, but then they just go down the road, don't they?
Yeah. Well, they go down the road and Louis goes searching for the plague, and that's when he finds Claudia, and that's when we're going to take a break and come back and talk about her.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
So before the break, we were talking about Claudia. So this is a little girl, a 12-year-old girl in the film, a 5-year-old girl in the book, whose mum is dead, her dad is missing, and Louis stumbles upon her. And this is the big moment. Lestat decides that she is the companion that Louis needs. And so after dancing with her mother's corpse... he starts to turn Claudia, and as I said in my intro, it's almost a way of sort of getting pregnant to keep his man, and to give them a family, to try and give Louis a reason to stay with him. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah. It's quite a moving moment when Brad Pitt first discovers Kirsten Dunst, and she's holding on to the corpse of her mum, and Kirsten Dunst goes, please wake mama, monsieur. And you're like, kid, she's look up. She's got one eye. I mean, she dayed. She is so dayed. She's a rotting corpse. Now, I'm not saying that kids back then were stupid, but you got to know when someone ain't going to wake up. And that like, she's got an eye out. She's
no. She's green, isn't she?
It's like, wake her up. Are you stupid? Are you a stupid kid? Oh my God, you're stupid, aren't you? That's what I was thinking anyway.
harsh on Claudia. And so she starts draining Lestat's lifeblood, and she seems kind of powerful and slightly different right from the off. She's eating his blood, and she says, I want some more, which kind of reminded me of Oliver Twist, the way she says that. So she's this little child, but she almost immediately becomes a ruthless killer.
Yeah, but she does the progression or transition from like a child with a child's appetite, and children always just want what they want and want more, to then a very frustrated, very angry, tiny woman, because that's what she becomes, because she ages technically by 30 years, but she's still a 12-year-old, and she doesn't seem like a child anymore. And then you think about when she loses her shit about that. She is Kirsten Dunst in a film with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise, holding her own, screaming at them that they've done this to her and she's never going to change, then like hacking at her hair with scissors. And Kirsten Dunst does a really brilliant job of showing Claudia's change, but also like holding court with these two more established, although not fully, like not for Brad Pitt, like not as mainstream as he would be become, but older, bigger actors than she is.
Yeah, she is absolutely brilliant in this. She was just discovered by a talent scout. She was the first person to audition for the role, and she got the role. And yeah, she's great. And that whole montage where she is like killing everyone they bring to her to perform tasks.
I wanted to talk about that before she makes that change. It's the dressmaker, it's the doll maker, it's the piano teacher. And you guys recognized him, didn't you?
Yeah, Trigger from Only Fools and Horses.
It's not.
It is. But she does this by, this is while she's still a bit more innocent. She does this by pretending she's lost her mother, but she's still this little girl because she's still sleeping in Louis's coffin. And even when she gets her own coffin, she comes back and crawls into his. And it's all very sweet. And as Vicky says, she does make this change in her happens when she sees a naked woman and she realizes she's never going to grow up to be like that. And so she gets upset, which is when Lestat moans about more melancholy nonsense, which I think the audience could say at that point as well. But as you say, she holds her own against these two much older actors, but she's brilliant. But I find it also vaguely uncomfortable to watch these situations that she's put in. Some of the stuff she has to say to Louis about him being her beloved, telling him Archie's his forever. You know, it's very.
Yeah.
She still was a 12-year-old girl. She might have been a mature actress, but it's pretty freaky stuff they've got her saying.
Yes, I agree. It's difficult, isn't it? If you were looking at it and you didn't think of actors as real people, which I know they are, but when Tom Cruise says to her, when they're having a bit of a row, and he's like, I'm going to go and find a woman who has endowments that you'll never have. And he's being mean to her to say, you'll never grow up. But that is that's a man saying that to a 12-year-old girl on a work set. And it's just the line as written, and it makes perfect sense. For the characters, I suppose, if you're reading it within the safety of a book, you can do what you like. But it is an uncomfortable thing to see.
Yeah. If she was a 17-year-old woman playing a 12-year-old girl, fine.
Yeah.
But she's not. And it's... So, yeah, they decide, Louis and Claudia to... Well, Claudia does really, to kill Lestat. And as I said, Tom Cruise dies in this film, I think, as much as he does in Edge of Tomorrow, which we've talked about in the past. Because it starts off with him getting poisoned. There's twin boys that she's put laudanum in to keep laudanum. Their blood warm.
Laudanum.
Laudanum. Laudanum, sorry.
Yeah. This is like Louis all over again.
she poisons him and then cuts him. And we see Lestat bleeding out on the floor, which is very horrific and effective. And it was only when I was watching behind the scenes that's not Tom Cruise. That's like a robot version of him they've got bleeding out, which is brilliant, because
really?
I'd never clocked that before.
Yeah.
In the narration, it says vampires can turn into robots. It was one of the rules of vampirism in this movie, yeah.
So they drown him, dump him in a swamp, but then he comes back looking a bit like Blake Carrington in Scrooged, I thought. And this is when you, one of those moments, I think, Vicky, when you were saying it feels like he gets a bit of a harpsichord entrance, where he's playing the piano while describing drinking alligator blood and snake blood and toad
like
blood.
And a net fluttering over him, and he's like, da-da! It's brilliant.
Yeah, and he gets that incredible line where he goes, Claudia, you've been a very, very naughty girl.
I love it.
He's having a great time, which makes it all the more sad when he gets killed again a minute later.
Yeah.
They burn him this time. And so we think we've seen the last of him, although we know we haven't really. And the pair of them go globetrotting, searching for vampires. And then this is sort of in the home straight now. We head to Paris, September 1870. And finally, we see Louis enjoying himself a little bit, living in high society with Claudia.
Did you think that it was a bit of a shame that they nip off to Paris in a sort of desperate search for one of their own kind, someone they would have never met apart from Lestat, and the first vampire they run into is a mime vampire? Oh, gutted. Absolutely gutted.
So this is Stephen Reyes Santiago, who we meet pissing about walking on the ceiling. And he works at the Theatre de Vampire, run by Armand. So what did you think of this vampire theatre, the pair of you?
Oh, I thought this section is very long, very long. And again, I was distracted by, are they going to all this trouble of putting on a show where they then kidnap a poor woman and the audience think it's part of the act and then everyone gets to eat her? But would one person, it's a lot of effort to go to, isn't it? If one person is like a canopy, really, at that point, because there's so many of them. It seemed maybe they were overdoing it a bit.
You're really obsessed many vampires, how many people the vampires have to eat, aren't you? I don't think it's that important.
It's really important.
Yeah, if they did a show a night, well, that's 365 people.
No,
but if they did a matinee performance as well, then
that's
they're doubling
point.
That.
That's a good point, so,
And the problem I had with that is it's just such a strange, like, considering vampires have to remain hidden and they don't want people to know that they're eating other people, like, to survive, you'd think that they'd probably go, what we shouldn't do, guys, is do it on stage in front of a packed theatre, because people might go, that looks horribly real. And the way this should be played in this scene, to me anyway, is they do all that and the audience is laughing along and then they see the girl and it's this horrible death and the vampires pounce on her and drink her blood. I think the audience should applaud at the end, and that's their cover. The fact that the audience thinks this is so spectacular, like, and it's such a great production that they're all like, woo, 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 brilliant, love it. This vampire theatre is the best thing. And that's how they get away with it. But they don't. They kill the girl and the audience shuffles out going, that was fucking disgusting. How awful. That looked real. We should probably find out who that girl was, because I'm not sure that was part of the play. And because it's an awful end.
And the Theatre de Vampire is based on the Grand Guignol, which is these immoral, naturalistic horror shows that were put on in France at the time. So it's based in some reality, but I think you're right, Alex, that it doesn't, that pays off incorrectly, doesn't it? And we meet Armand, who runs the theatre, played by Antonio Banderas, who does a lot of pontificating and philosophizing when he's talking to Louis about the nature of true evil and the existence of God. He tells Louis, he talks in riddles, telling him he's asking the wrong questions. And Armand wants Louis either because he's falling in love with him, or he talks about wanting to make contact with this age, which I find is all a little bit weak.
Yeah, I've seen this film many times, and I think we just used to skip through this bit because it's boring and doesn't make any sense. What's he talking about?
I thought it was me. I thought, did I miss something here? Bring back Louis, like, have him moan a bit more. It's better than this guy. I didn't know what on earth I was meant to think. I was like, you know, it's a blessed release when they start killing people.
So, well, Claudia believes that Louis is going to leave her for Armand, so she wants a companion, a sort of a mother figure, and Louis gives her that, but then the theatre vampires turn on them. They kill Claudia, turn her into ash. This is the scene that Alex said really disturbed him.
Did it not you? It's a hell of a scene. It's like the sun creeping down the shaft and the rest of it. I think I'd forgotten it. The moment that really upsets me is that you just got to feel sorry for that woman who is literally just just been turned into a vampire. She's like, great, I am immortal and I have a child now because my own daughter died and nothing can kill me but sunlight. But that's not likely, right? Because I'll sleep in a coffin. Cool, 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 cool. Great. I am going to, oh, what? I'm not part of this. Now I'm in a cell. Oh, come on. I only got turned. Can I go back? I can't. No, it's just, the deal is done. Right, fine. I'll just die. It's awful.
This breaks Louis and he takes pretty hardcore revenge, burning the vampires while they're sleeping and then scything them down when they wake up.
Also, can I ask a question? So this whole thing, so the vampires do tell Louis that they're probably going to kill Kirsten Dunst because they say the punishment for killing another vampire is death. That's what they say. Now, to me, that sounds like a vicious circle of punishment, because if you kill a vampire, then you must be killed by another vampire. So then I'm assuming someone has to kill that vampire. So I kill her, then you kill me, then someone kills you, and so on and so on. So I don't quite understand how that punishment works. I could have done with a bit of narration.
We've got to stop worrying about the internal logic of vampires. But so he kills them all, and Louis then becomes depressed. He says that all his passion has gone with the golden hair. He feels empty, not for the first bloody time. And so he heads back to the States to watch the sunrise in a variety of cinemas through the decades. He spends all his time watching films, it seems, which is a bit like us in lockdown at the moment. He watches Nosferatu, he watches Gone with the Wind, he watches Superman, and he watches the Mel Gibson movie Tequila Sunrise. And then, guess what? Lestat's back.
Yay!
By this point, we're expecting it. It doesn't really pay off anymore. He looks emaciated, he's at death's door, he seems to be afraid of helicopters for some reason. he does sort of own up to the love he feels for Louis, and he says the more Louis refused me, the more Lestat wanted him. He wants Louis to stay to help him become the old Lestat, but Louis ain't having any of it. And then we're back with Malloy, who in the film version likes the story so much, it has the undesired effect, as it were, for Louis. He wants to become a vampire. Louis loses his shit over this, and then he disappears, and that's it. That is where we leave our protagonist. He just buggers off.
Yeah, it's a final kicking the fangs for Louis as the protagonist in this movie. That he doesn't get the end. It's almost like the movie goes, yeah, thank God he's gone. Right, now meet the real protagonist,
because I guess Tom Cruise then gets his movie star ending where he shows up in Malloy's car. He says, I assume I need no introduction. He bites him and says, I feel better already. It is a great moment. He's putting the ruffles on his shirt. He makes a joke about Louis still whining, saying, I've had to listen to that for centuries. As have we, mate.
Brilliant.
As have we.
Brilliant. But do you know what? I think that is why this ending is so perfect, because he's almost the voice of the audience, and he's like thank God I'm back, right? Hey, how you doing? Yeah, Lestat here, need no introduction, done that joke already. Why don't we shut the fucking Louis up on that cassette recorder? I'll put on the Stones and we'll just go for a drive. Yeah, cool.
Oh, would that he did, though. He puts on Guns N' Roses instead of the Stones, which is really annoying.
Yeah,
I know they were selling the movie, but it's the wrong version of Sympathy for the Devil. But yeah, he ends by saying, for the 100th time, I'm going to give you the choice I never had. So that is Interview with the Vampire. In the book version, it's slightly different. The boy, Malloy doesn't have a name in the book. He's just called the boy. He actually goes looking for Lestat in the hope that he will turn him. So it doesn't sort of happen to him. He goes searching for it. But other than that, and the changing the age of Claudia, it's pretty similar to the book.
Yeah, I did sort of wonder. There is that question mark. And when I saw that little fact, as I said, I haven't read the book, but I did see that fact about how in the book, the boy does go looking for Lestat, which seems to make a little more sense to me, because how Lestat has left New Orleans when he's too afraid to go outside because helicopters, and he then somehow tracks Brad Pitt to San Francisco and in his weakened state and climbs into the back of Christian Slater's car. It all seemed a bit far-fetched, but I forgave it because it's a hell of an ending.
And and Louis has a bit more fun in the book, in that he and Armand actually live together for a spell and travel through Europe together, sort of having adventures. So, yeah, I think Louis enjoys himself more in the book than the film. So maybe they did sort of dupe Brad Pitt. Maybe he really did think he was playing a slightly different version of the character than the one he ended up playing. But shall we move on to the bits?
Hell yeah.
Okay. Victoria, what is your favourite scene?
It's the scene we've talked about a couple of times already, but it's the thing I remember the most about the film, and it's Claudia and her new mum getting burned by the sun. And when they get burned by the sun, I'd blended that scene with what happens when Louis finds her, which she's Ash, but she, in the shape of herself. And then it's the callback to the statue, which I think is the gravestone of his wife and child, isn't it, at the beginning? You know, the one that winks at him when he... I don't think it winks. When he becomes a vampire. So I think that the Ashy Chris... Ashy Claudia is my favourite bit. And I just remember it always.
Good scene.
Good stuff. Alex?
At the end... Hands down, the end, the bit where Lestat pops up in the back of Christian Slater's car. It's so great, because Lestat is just such a fun character. And the last time you'd seen him, he, despite the fact he's a gleeful killing machine, he becomes so sympathetic. And when he's scared of the bright lights, like a mogwai, and then he pops up at that end. And the lines you mentioned, I assume I need no introduction, I feel better already. I didn't see it at the cinema, but I know for a fact that regardless of the 2 hours that had gone previously, that ending, I'd have walked out of that cinema like on a massive high, because it is a perfect ending. And I forgive all the flaws of this film, because it leaves you going, fucking A, cool. The stat, man. Oh, that bit in the car. Love that. What about Louis, though? Don't remember Louis. Is he in it?
It's a very good one. I'm quite jealous of your one, but I'm going to stick with mine. I am picking Claudia's killing spree. I think more of the film should be that fun, twisted Blackley comic, sort of less wallowing in the misery and more sort of what a laugh it is being a vampire.
Yes.
So, Victoria, what is your most valuable whatever MVW?
Tom Cruise by a country mile, because he is the most fun thing. This should be his film, because he's not quite a villain, like Alex says, and you've said, like by the end, you're on his team very much. So if he's not going to be played or portrayed as a bad man, then we can spend 2 hours with him and see all the fun things that he gets up to. So, yeah, and again, without him in this film, I can still forgive it. I just love it so much. But without him, I think it might basically be unwatchable, which would be a bit of a shame. So, yes, Tom Cruise.
Alex.
For all the reasons Victoria just announced, Tom Cruise is also my MVW. I think Kirsten Dunst is a very close second. Yeah. I think she's great in it. But yeah, it's all about Cruise. And when the character disappears, when Lestat is, in inverted commas, killed, like, I think for the third time, the movie loses something, you know. I'm a huge fan of Antonio Banderas, but he is a poor substitute for that period of the film.
You know what? I would have said Tom Cruise, but I, at the time, I can remember so wanting Daniel Day-Lewis to play Lestat that it spoilt it for me a little bit.
So you're picking Daniel Day-Lewis?
I'm picking Kirsten Dunst.
That's fair. Okay.
Because in spite of the uncomfortable things she's made to say and do, and that was playing on my mind, particularly this time watching it sort of 20 years later. And I think I read a a quote with her as well somewhere where she was saying that everyone would come up to her and say, oh, you know, what was it like kissing Brad Pitt? And she said it was the first time I ever kissed a boy or a man. And it was very uncomfortable.
Oh.
And it's not this. I mean, she wasn't complaining about it, but also it didn't feel like it was this fun memory for her. I think there was some discomfort. So that's deeply problematic.
I also think, what sort of journalist, like, asks a kid?
No, not a journalist. I think this is, she says people come up to her and ask.
Sorry, yeah. You weren't a journalist back then, but you are now. But you weren't a journalist when you asked her that.
She was saying girls come up to her and ask her it all the time. I think that was the point she was making, right. Like almost like they're jealous of her. And she was, I think her response is that it's not something to be that jealous of. It's probably quite problematic, but she's fantastic. And
because he was in a bad mood. Let me tell you, it's no fun kissing Brad Pitt when he's sulking. Yeah, you'd think it would be. But man, he was bitching about the darkness. He hates London, by the way.
Victoria, if you could change anything, would you change anything? If so, what?
So it's very obvious, but I might as well get this covered off. So when we meet Brad Pitt, let him be like a goofy, silly, boyish protege who then starts to hang on to his remorse as the last thing that makes him human. Because the morals behind that and what it has to say about the human condition and etc., I love all of that, that the only thing that he's hanging on to is the thing that makes him miserable, but he needs a journey. So he either starts from that place and shucks it all off, or when Lestat falls in love with him, when they first meet, because he's like this gorgeous, sunburnished, foolish boy, and that's why he loves him. And then he turns into this mopey, sulky man by the end.
Yeah. It's a solid change.
Alex?
It's a solid change. It's ever so slightly long, and in a way that it really doesn't need to be. I think there's one too many conversations between Lestat and Louis that go along the lines of, you're a vampire, you have to kill people. But I don't want to kill people, but you have to. But I don't want to, but you're a vampire. But I don't want to be, but you have to kill people. But I don't want to, again and again and again. So I'd probably just maybe like halve the number of conversations about how Brad Pitt doesn't want to kill people. or, a bit like Vicky's, I don't know. I don't know that it'd entirely work because it would sort of ruin Louis's arc. But maybe like have him first become a vampire and then be like so caught up in being a vampire. He's like munching his way through people and then suddenly have an epiphany and realize it's wrong and then start regretting having made that decision. So at least he's not the same freaking note for the entire 2-hour film.
I agree. And my change is either make him not a slave owner or address the fact that he is a slave owner. Like, do something with that or don't do it, because there is something there that you can use. But they don't bother. It's just a fact. It's just in his history. It's in his background. And I think that's a wasted opportunity and also really a problem to have your hero be that person and never discuss it. So I think we're all agreed that there's just something up with the Louis character in this film that, maybe it needed a rewrite. Although maybe Anne Rice wouldn't have let him.
There's something up him, a stick up his bum.
And then, there's a reason, actually, that the other books that Anne Rice wrote were about Lestat, you know? Lestat is the hero of the Vampire Chronicles, and Louis is just a brief blip on his life experience. Probably the most boring period of his life. And it's what she ended up, that was the first story, but she quickly realised that Lestat was her character.
I've not seen Queen of the Damned. Have you?
No.
Oh, I no. feel like I have, but maybe...
It's a liar, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, and Stuart Townsend, yeah. I feel
right,
like
that's
I have,
it. Yeah, Stuart Townsend plays him. No. Mm. All right, future Clash Pod, maybe not. Great. would you guys, after a week of this bloodsucker brawl, like to do the verdict now?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's do the verdict.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
All right, Chris. All right, Vicky, these were your movies. So you take us through the verdict. Who do you want to go first?
Chris.
Okay, I feel like what we do in the shadows makes it difficult to take both these movies seriously now. I think what they've done makes aspects of both these films quite laughable. I feel like Interview is a movie that has changed since I watched it. It seems to have got less sexy and less scary and quite a lot more boring than I remember. But I'm with Alex, what he said about Dracula in terms of it having style over substance, which is weird to say about a film based on a literary classic. But I think the adaptation has too much horror for romantics and too much romance for the horror crowd. And then at times it felt very silly watching it on this occasion. But I love the artistry in that film. And watching them back to back, I was much more entertained by what Coppola had done. So I'm going for the OG Dracula.
Oh,
and I genuinely don't know which way you guys are going to go. I haven't been able to, tell this week, unlike last week.
Okay. Shall I go then, Victoria? You pick the movie, so you get to go last, which means I'll wade in to this blood-soaked quagmire. I thought you were going to go for Interview with a Vampire, Chris. The way you were talking, clever little you. You made it seem like you were going one way, and then, whoa, the old switcheroo from Chris Thrilly. Never a dull moment. You pulled it back around, and you went Dracula. And seeing as Chris quoted me and then picked the movie, I think Dracula is style over substance 100%. I was bored by the second half. I think it looks fantastic. Visually, it's a work of freaking art. But a good-looking film, there's not a great film make. And Interview with a Vampire does also have issues. It's a bit of a slog. Way too much sulky Brad. But hands down, for me, it's a really enjoyable movie. And Tom Cruise is excellent in it. And I'm picking Interview with a Vampire. So
yay!
One each. One each.
I'm really pleased because I'm also going to pick Interview with the Vampire, because even though I know it's boring, I still love it. I don't even need any more justification than that. It's a film that's very close to my heart, and despite its many, many flaws, I just love it. And I do love Dracula, but it's got too many other distractions. Like, I know it's shallow, but the accents annoy me so much. And with the girls laughing in the rain, I hate that so much. So
rain, it's raining. Rain.
I can't with it. Oh, yeah. So yeah, Interview with the Vampire. Hooray, hooray, hooray.
Whoop, whoop. Interview with the Vampire is our winner of this bloodsucker brawl. I'm happy about that. Chris,
Alex,
you okay with that?
Yeah, but do you not want to change your opinion? You've done it before. Perfect opportunity. Come on, Al. Don't let us down. Flip-flop Zane.
Yeah. I'm not becoming the flip-flop king. That was a one-off, and I've torn myself apart emotionally thinking about flip-flopping that day. So, no, Interview with the Vampire is 100%. Well, it's not. It's two-thirds, but never mind. It's our winner this week. That's the most important thing. Congratulations, Interview with a Vampire.
The
right.
Vampire. For God's sake, get the title right.
Well, thank God we never have to say the title again. It's done. Okay, let's look ahead to next week. I gave you a clue on Monday's episode. My clue was fathers and daughters and guns. Oh, my. Would anyone like to guess at what the movies we are going to be talking about that I am giving to each of you could be?
I'm not very good with clues, so I can't.
You can say no.
No.
Oh, no.
Right, okay. Chris?
No.
Right. From 2000, I always get nervous when I do this bit because I'm like, because I've got more than one option, but I've already committed to a certain clue. And so we're sticking with this option now. But I've got, because I wasn't sure which way I was going to go, I've got my other option written down on my bit of paper. And you know, when you're committed to one thing, you always go, oh, but maybe that was the better one. Anyway, never mind. Victoria from 2008.
Yeah.
You, we've talked about him on the show, but we've never talked about a movie that he's been in, as far as I can remember. He got a mention on Monday's show. Liam Neeson
Yeah.
In.
Yes. Oh my God.
2008. Taken.
Yes. Oh my God. I love that film.
I literally had that planned for my next free one with something else. That's mad. Please have it. Please say you paired it with the other one that I was thinking of.
Oh my God.
Is it 1986?
Oh my God. This is too.
Is it 1986?
I got it as 1985.
85 but we've been talking about it is. I'm so excited.
Is it, Chris? Go on from 1985.
Is it Commando?
It is, yeah.
Commando. You don't know how happy I am. I've literally got it written in my phone to do Commando and Taken, and I was even going to do it in that order. I was going to give Vicky Taken, and then I was going to give you Commando.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Look at that. Great minds and
that's
all
amazing.
That. Taken from 2008 and Commando from 1985 are going to be next week's
Clash Pod.
I'm nearly
crying. I'm so happy.
That is your homework. I'll tell you later, but there was another film that was very close to replacing Commando on this list, but I decided Commando was the better call. And we will be back. Please to take the time if you can to give us a star rating on the Apple Podcasts app or wherever you get your podcasts if you can. That would be lovely. Thank you for listening. Congrats to Interview with the Vampire. Get your homework done. Taken versus Commando is next week's Clash Pod. Bye bye for now.
This was a Stakhanov production.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. You thought about getting your own fucking out.
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.